wanted a chance to make law. Well, here it is. Make it a good one.
Is this your gun?
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
We have your name on the registration.
No, you don't.
Don't be ridiculous. Networks don't get to decide elections. Courts do.
Your Honors, I'm not some slick big city lawyer like my opponent here.
What just happened? You kind of confessed. Sorry.
And I find you guilty. Bring out the wheel of punishment!
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 457. I'm Thomas. That's Andrew. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm fantastic, Thomas. How are you?
Yeah, I am as well. We're just, you know, well, for the last like 2 weeks, just been fantastic. Over the moon, so happy. And I think we get even more good news in today's episode. We've got an update on more consequences. Lynn Wood couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Consequences for Lynn Wood. And also, we are interviewing Jamil Favors, who you would have seen and heard from if you saw or listened to our election fundraiser. Swung the election, by the way, in Georgia. I think we can say we made the difference there. And Jamil was a fantastic interview, and we decided we wanted to have him back on as soon as possible, and we are. So I can't wait for that.
I'm super excited about it.
All right, but first, consequences.
It's over, Beast.
So what happened to Lynn Wood?
You are going to love this story, Thomas. So one of the recurring questions we get, you know, pretty much every episode is, when are there going to be consequences for Sidney Powell, for unleashing the Kraken, for Rudy Giuliani, who, by the way, is under investigation by the New York State Bar Association. And here's a story about reckoning coming due for L. Lynn Wood, whom you may recognize as being a part of some of the dumber of Trump's election-related lawsuits.
And that saying something.
Yeah, it's a low bar that he managed to limbo under. So, and the way in which this came about, I think, is A, brilliant, and B, potentially a model for some of these jerks going forward. So here's what happened. Lynn Wood has been Carter Page's personal attorney. And Carter Page, you might recall from our discussion of the Mueller report, Carter Page was the person sort of at the heart of making the allegations that the FISA wiretaps issued in 2016 on the basis of the Steele dossier, in whole or in part, were invalid. And in July of 2020, he sued Oath Inc., the parent company to Yahoo News. And that was with respect to Yahoo's alleged failure to follow appropriate journalistic standards of ethics in publishing the Steele dossier. And I need to tell you, Page has been peddling these claims since 2017 and has lost everywhere he's raised them, right? But when you read this lawsuit, right, it specifically and narrowly says that other journalistic outlets, right, like the New York Times and the Washington Post, vetted the Steele dossier more heavily than Yahoo, right? Gave Carter Page the opportunity to respond, right? So it's not, when you read the lawsuit, it's not obviously written by a crazy person, right? And that's, you know, sort of the standards we're looking at these days. So as always, opening arguments, you start at the back and you look at the signature block. The signature block begins with Sean J. Bellew, B-E-L-L-E-W, who is just a respected solo practitioner in Delaware, right? Nothing weird there. Everybody else is from out of state. they are admitted pro hoc vice. So on the caption are Lynn Wood. We're going to talk about him. Then the law firm of Pierce Bainbridge. And you might be thinking, well, that kind of rings a little bell. Like,
did James Bond in the 90s?
Yeah, exactly. There's Pierce Brosnan, but not bad. Pierce Bainbridge is the law firm that represented Tulsi Gabbard in her garbage lawsuits. God. They represent Rudy Giuliani. The firm supposedly shut down in April of 2020, but John Pierce continues to use their caption.
Would have been better off with Pierce Brosnan, actually.
Yeah, they would be way better off with Pierce Brosnan. And somebody named Kay, that's short for Carrie, Lawson Pedigo. It's not somebody I'd ever heard of before. So I did a little sleuthing. And Pedigo, Pierce, and Wood together are like the three amigos of right-wing grift. They've formed an outfit called hashtag Fight Back, and they own the website fightback.law, which is the only law firm website that I've ever been to where you can buy merch, although the merch link is broken, and they solicit donations, which, you know, again, seems a little weird for a law firm, but there you go. They just picked up Kyle Rittenhouse as a client. Oh, so, I mean, God. You know, when we're talking about bottom feeding, we are talking about the very, very worst right-wing bottom feeders here. So Carter Page wants to be represented by human garbage. So these guys do what you typically do in cases like this, which is you hire local counsel that knows the rules of the jurisdiction that you're in. In this case, they're in state court in Delaware. None of John Pierce or Lawson Pedigo or Lynn Wood are admitted in Delaware, so they have to get admitted pro hoc vice. That's a totally pro forma thing, right? So they file the complaint. The complaint has all of their signatures on it with a little italicized pro hoc vice motion pending. And then the court's like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. You got a Delaware lawyer. He vouches for you. You're in, right? And the reason to do that is because the court values the choice of a litigant of getting her own counsel, right? Of saying, hey, I want, you know, this person to represent me, right? And that ought to be something that, you know, that gets some respect, right? That to which is the court owes some deference, your choice of your lawyer.
Sure.
Yeah. So July of 2020, they file the lawsuit. They serve Yahoo Oath Inc. in August. Yahoo Oath Inc. moves to dismiss. So they file a motion to dismiss, brief in support. Carter Page gets to file his opposition. Yahoo gets to file their reply brief. So now we're in late November, and that motion to dismiss has been fully briefed. And the court holds a Zoom status conference on December 3rd, setting oral argument on the motion to dismiss for January 13th. Now, that's significant because typically, well, I can't speak to Delaware state courts. I don't practice in Delaware state court. I can tell you typically courts, particularly federal courts, don't often schedule oral argument on pending motions, right? It means that they think this is something where it's a close call. And so we want to hear on the merits of the argument. And by saying it's a close call, right, that would be a huge win for Yahoo, for Oath Inc., right? That would say, yeah, we think that there is a reasonable probability that this defamation lawsuit about how you handled the Steele dossier should be dismissed without having to conduct any discovery or do anything else further, right? Okay. So that's the court does, sets oral argument on the motion to dismiss for January 13th. And then something amazing happened over the next 2 weeks. On December 18th, the judge, Craig Karsnitz, issued a sua sponte rule to show cause issue. Okay. And it says rule to show cause issue. This rule to show cause why the permission to practice in this case issued to L. Lynn Wood Jr. Esquire should not be revoked. Mr. Wood and local counsel have until January 6th to respond to this rule. And if the defendant has a position on the rule, the defendant shall file it in writing by the same date. The defendant did not take a position, which, by the way, smart practice, right? Like when the judge wants to disqualify plaintiff's counsel and you're defense counsel, you shut the hell up, right? Let the judge figure that one out. But the reason was, remember I told you, you know, something amazing happened in between December 3rd and December 18th. Yeah. During those 2 weeks that the judge had seen Linwood file these bullshit election lawsuits in Georgia and Wisconsin, right? The Georgia suit was dismissed as, quote, without basis in law or fact.
Yeah.
And the Wisconsin lawsuit, we actually mentioned this as, you know, part of our quick run through all these garbage lawsuits. That was the one that sought injunctive relief, even though it wasn't certified as an injunction, where they failed to serve the proper defendants, right? Like it was just, it was, as Judge Karsnitz put it, would be rejected by a first year civil procedure class, right? And so what Judge Karsnitz said was, you seem to be a terrible lawyer. I don't want you practicing. Why? I want you, this show cause, I want you to file a document or documents as to why you should get to be in my court, right? And if you ask yourself, can he do that? The answer is 100%. Yes, he can do that. Local Rule 90.1E says the court may revoke a pro hoc vice order, sua sponte, that is on its own, if it determined that the continued admission pro hoc vice would be inappropriate or inadvisable, right? So that's the standard. The judge has to conclude that it would be inappropriate or inadvisable to let Linwood continue to practice law in this case, right? Because pro hoc vice meaning Latin for, I think, one time, right? Like, so in other words, you only get admitted in this particular case you're not admitted into Delaware to start just trying cases there generally. And you're there because you're under the supervision of a Delaware lawyer and you promise to be on your best behavior. And the court's like, yeah, you seem really bad at this. So gave Wood until January 6th to file his brief. Another practice tip, the court notes somewhat annoyedly that Wood filed his brief at 10:09 p.m., on January 6th. And again, in federal court, it's generally considered tolerable, particularly if the timing, you know, the timelines are really, really short, to file up until midnight on the night of a deadline. When a court gives you 3 weeks over the holiday and says, you know, get this in by January 6th, like I would be aiming for the afternoon of the 6th, you know, but in any event, Wood filed his brief at 10:09 p.m. on January 6th. And it basically said, Judge, none of that stuff that you talked about happened in this court. And
yeah, clean slate, I guess.
Yeah. Sanctioned, right? I haven't engaged in any conduct that has violated the model rules of professional conduct. So so what are you on about? And then after that filing, the court said, issued another minute order and said, hey, you know that January 13th hearing that we had? That hearing is now solely for revocation of the pro hoc vice. We're not going to get to the motion to dismiss. We're going to get to that another time. And the court issued that order on January 4th. And then on January 6th, not only did Linwood file this paper, but, you know, an armed insurrection took place at the Capitol.
Sure.
And so Judge Karsnitz just got writing. And he issued a written opinion on January 11th and said, you know what? Remember that whole oral argument thing on January 13th? I don't need oral argument. This is not a close case for me. I don't want to hear from this clown horn. I'm going to rule on my own motion after reviewing the pleadings, and I'm kicking him out of my court.
Wow.
And yes, again, under Rule 90.1, the judge can do that. You have to provide an opportunity to be heard, which can be oral argument or can be on the pleadings. This ruling, I'm going to include it in the show notes, and I'm going to read some of the best parts right now. Quote, prior to the pandemic, I watched Daily Counsel, right? That is Sean Ballou, right? Practice before me in a civil, ethical way to tirelessly advance the interests of their clients. It would dishonor them if I were to allow this pro hoc vice order to stand. The conduct of Mr. Wood, albeit not in my jurisdiction, exhibited a toxic stew of mendacity, prevarication, and surprising incompetence. What has been shown in court, decisions of our sister states, satisfies me that it would be inappropriate and inadvisable to continue Mr. Wood's permission to practice before this court. I acknowledge that I preside over a small part of the legal world in a small state. However, we take pride in our bar.
Yeah, not in my beach community.
Exactly right. Then he says, one final matter. A number of events have occurred since the filing of the rule to show cause. I've seen reports of tweets attributable to Mr. Wood. At least one called for the arrest and execution of our vice president. Another alleged claims against Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, which are too disgusting and outrageous to repeat. I would repeat them as well. And I think I'm going to follow Judge Karsnitz's example here. It was outrageous what he said about John Roberts, right? Following on top of these are the events of January 6th, 2021 in our nation's capital. No doubt these tweets and many other things incited these riots.
Wow.
Then he says, look, I'm not here to litigate if Mr. Wood was ultimately the source of the incitement. I make no finding with regard to his conduct, and it does not form any part of the basis for my ruling. I reaffirm my limited role, but I am revoking my order, granting Linwood Esquire the privilege of representing the plaintiff in this case. Given my ruling, the hearing scheduled for January 13th is canceled. My staff will contact the parties to schedule as soon as possible a date for oral argument on the defendant's motion to dismiss. It is so ordered. Get out.
This is not like normal stuff, right? I mean, this is pretty, pretty big judge smackdown.
I have never seen this. And look, we talked about this when Rudy Giuliani moved to admit himself pro hoc vice in Pennsylvania and lied, right? And said, oh yeah, I'm in good standing in New York. When it turned out he was not in good standing in New York. He was in fact, listed as retired and hadn't paid his bar dues. And I said at the time, like, you know, it's possible that the court might look at that. But I predicted correctly that the court would be like, yeah, we're not going to allow that sort of procedural. God bless him. If Donald Trump wants to be represented by you, Rudy Giuliani, we're going to let that happen. To override that, right? To say, we don't want you in the building, is a pretty, I have never ever seen a court.
In fairness, how often does a lawyer, try to lead an insurrection and say they should hang the vice president and all that stuff? So good. I mean, this seems like it was called for.
Exactly right. And people keep saying, right, when are other lawyers, other judges, when are there going to be consequences for being Sidney Powell, for being Linwood? Well, look, here's a legitimate, real consequence: getting kicked out of the case, can no longer be paid by Carter Page, right? Like, this is a paying gig here. And the court has said, get out. I'm not letting somebody like you practice in my courtroom, which is kind of amazing.
Good times. Consequences, folks. So fun. All right. Well, I think we need to get over to our interview. Jamil Favors, let's get Jamil on the line.
Let's do it.
And we're joined by Jamil Favors. Jamil, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty great. So happy to be back with you all. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I mean, first order of business, extended victory lap, right?
I thought the first order of business was sleep, but I'll take the victory lap as well.
Yeah. Well, actually, along those lines, why don't you tell us about how your day went on election day, or, how the subsequent time has gone? What have been your feelings, your takeaways, how great was this win?
Okay. If you don't mind, I'd love to tell you about the whole day. So on the day of the election, I had a chance to lead a team of attorneys in what we call the boiler room. The boiler room receives issues across the state from poll observers and poll watchers from, the 159 counties. So amazing, an amazing shout out to the voter protection team and the poll watcher team who was able to, just get volunteers from all of these different counties. So our call time was, I believe, 5:30 in the morning. So I was up at 5:30 in the morning. We were on Zoom all day long. And because we want to make sure that we have like this cohesive nature, you have to keep your camera on Zoom, but also at two different points during the day, no, three different points during the day, I had to leave. One, because we were leading a tele-town hall for a certain population of voters where we wanted to get out voting information. So at around 10 o'clock, there were about about 17,000 calls that went out to voters who hadn't yet to vote. And I basically got a chance to just really just give these voters the kind of fact that they need. So then I hop back on and then I get an email and say, hey, Jamil, there's this news station that wants to talk to somebody in the voter protection team to basically get, you know, some facts about what happens if you get in line before 7 p.m. What are some of the rules and some of the laws that they should have in their back pocket when you're going to the polling location. So I run to my room. I put on a half of a suit, and I mean a half. I'm in shorts and flip flops.
Hopefully, it's the top bottom. Half. Don't tell me you just put on. Yeah.
So I'm in like shorts and flip flops on the bottom, and then the top I have like this full suit. So then I have to go back to the Zoom room, and that happens about twice. You know, we didn't have of course, there are always going to be issues, right? But we didn't have that many issues. So after the polls closed, I want to say we were able to get off of the Zoom room at around 8:30 p.m. And I don't know if you all were watching the election results, but at around 8:30 p.m., that's when you have you have a lot of your early numbers, and yeah. The early numbers were leading Democrat. But then I think we had a good sense of on election day that we were going to see a lot of votes come in for the opposing party, and we start to see that. So I was on the phone with one of my really good friends that I've known for over a decade. We went to college together, and we're just talking politics. And you know how it is when you're talking with your friends. So how do you think this is going? How do you think this is going to go? How do you think this is going to go? And then,
So let me jump in. How did you think it was going to go? Like in the afternoon, like were you cautiously optimistic? Were you just no idea? It's all get out the vote, or you know, did you have some access to, you know, some of the early data? Well, let me ask it as an open-ended, not a leading question.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll answer in a two-part segment. I'm an optimistic person, but I'm a complete realist. I give you like the facts and the realistic, but I'm like, you know, I'm a man of faith. I'm a man of hope. So I have all that optimism in the world. I will be completely honest with you that a little bit of my optimism was a little shot from 2018.
Yeah.
And from 2018, because in 2018, I asked my judge, could I leave my clerkship early to come volunteer with the same team that I now work with, volunteer. And I'll never forget, I was just sitting in a room with the then voter protection director and her deputy. And they just let me sit next to them and just basically just help them out for an entire month. And it was one of the most gratifying months I had ever been. And then I started at a firm and I was able to work the election day as a poll observer. And then, you know, we lose. And I had all of the optimism then. So I went into this runoff being cautiously optimistic. Yeah. So I always knew that whether we won was going to be highly dependent on how big the turnout was on election day. And that turnout was going to be dependent upon how dependent the turnout was for Loeffler and Perdue. And while the turnout was good, it's just the turnout on our side and the absentee ballot voting was just so much better. And I don't know if you can hear the excitement in my voice, but when the cherry on the top came in is that I went to high school in DeKalb County. I serve as a voter liaison in DeKalb County. Everything about me, so in DeKalb County, that's like the east side. Yeah. Anytime I talk to anybody, I'm like, I am Jamil Akeem Favors. I may have been born in Atlanta, but I grew up in the east side of DeKalb County. So to see DeKalb County make an imprint and knowing that a large part of that county are black and brown individuals that look like me was utterly amazing. And I got no sleep that night. I got no sleep at all.
That's such an awesome story. And I mean, especially like the rise to prominence of DeKalb County, right? Like that's, you know, for those of us who are not native Georgians, right? Like the learning the correct pronunciation, right? The silent L, all of that. Like, you know, that was we were sort of learning along with you know, with Steve Kornacki that night. But okay, so thanks in part to your efforts, hopefully in a small part, you know, to our efforts as well. We've got two new Democratic senators coming out of Georgia. What's next for you?
I'm not going to lie to you. If I had that answer, I wouldn't be as stressed out as I am right now. You know, and you two probably know this much more than I do. I took a risk in leaving the law firm back in July and coming over to the party. And right now, there's a level of excitement and a level of energy I have when speaking about advocacy, whether that's in criminal justice, whether that's in voting rights, and I would love to continue that. But I also know that while I am 31 years old and I've had a bevy of experience, a number of years in consulting and accounting, and some years in law, that those opportunities are far and few between. So right now, I'm interviewing every single day, and you know, trying to exude the same passion that I have on the call with you and land at the right opportunity. But what I do know is that there was no better feeling than I've had the last couple of months, knowing that I was being able to advocate on behalf of individuals whose rights were being disenfranchised. And there aren't many people who can say that they had a great couple of months in the middle of a pandemic. And mine happened to be because, you know, two individuals decided to for their voice to be heard. And Senator-elect Reverend Rockwell.
Does it feel good to say that?
Right. And Senator-elect John Ossoff. And they took that chance. And then we had individuals like you all who supported us. I mean, who ever thought Georgia, out of all places, would be the place that you'd be supporting? So I, on behalf of everyone, thanks you, because I can promise you that the money you all helped raise and the awareness you made possible went a very long way. Because as you can see, with the margins, every vote and every dollar mattered.
Yeah, and it feels so much better with the end result being a win. I know it's like, it's what we've seen in many of these elections where, like, honestly, it's the margins are so slim, but the difference between getting to say that you had that one extra vote that mattered, you know, to make you win versus losing is so huge. I mean, we had to go through when Trump won in 2016, he wins by 80,000 votes in three states, and yet that turned the entire narrative upside down of like what mattered to who, what were the best arguments, which voters' interests matter, all that changes. I mean, it shouldn't work that way, but it does. And so getting to sit here and say we won in Georgia and Democrats won in Georgia and we made a difference, oh my God, does it feel so much better than if we'd fallen short by just a couple votes, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I keep saying thank you all. Like, seriously, I if you could see my face, you'd see me like I wish I can give you guys a hug and say thank
someday.
You.
Hey, we are coming down to Georgia for a live show whenever whenever live shows are a thing again.
We might ask for you to put on the whole suit though, just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
or not.
Or just the bottom half. The minimum,
so, that's really funny. I would prefer the top half because I got some really comfortable sandals, but you know, I'll do whatever you all need.
Hey, my impression and again just from media coverage was that I think largely due to the work that you and others did, you know, in November and December, that by and large, you know, this was free, the two special runoff races in Georgia were largely free of, you know, shenanigans and efforts to, you know, kind of shut down polling places early or get people in line to leave, or, you know, I mean, the stories that you hear. What was that your experience, or, you know, what happened in, you know, as the day was sort of winding down, you know, were there any hot spots that you had to put out or anything that came up, or, you know, was it a pretty free and fair race?
I think free and fair is a very strong term. I will say there was a lot of work put in beforehand, and you saw the effects at the end of the day. I will say that there were a number of, I mean, there were a number of counties who were attempting to change polling locations last minute. One maybe even tried to close last minute because of some of their poll workers getting sick because of the virus. So what I will say is when you have you have over 2 million individuals vote early in person and over 1 million individuals vote by absentee ballot, it allows for the day of voting to just run a lot smoother. And the reason is that there's just less people to vote. Yeah. And there's just less people to vote. So there weren't, I'm not going to say that it was a free and clear election on election day. What I will say is that there were just less people and the system felt the effects of less people. And that's why I can say, you know, from the voter protection program, we were able, you know, for the most part, I believe, able to all be off. To go into our own selected misery or joy to watch the election results by like 9 p.m. I can promise you, and there have been prior elections where, I mean, things are being filed with the courts 9, 10 p.m. to keep polling locations open, and that didn't happen. And I think no matter what, that's a win. I don't think there'll ever be an election where everything closes at 7 p.m. because they open at 7 a.m. But if there's an election where voters are not feeling like they got in line at 7 p.m. and weren't allowed to vote, then that's a win. There's one thing the last year taught me is to count the small wins. So I'll count the small wins and just really congratulate everybody who had an effort there.
Well, and I really appreciate the two clarifications that you made there. And I want to sort of draw them out more specifically. The first is you are 100% correct that the background conditions remain an uphill battle, right? That they're not background conditions of fairness. They're conditions in which if you are Black or Brown, your registration is more likely to be scrutinized. If you are, you know, if you live in particular areas, which we could put in quotation marks, you are more likely to be underserved with resources, have fewer polling locations per capita. I mean, all of the underlying conditions that just made this, you know, that are worth talking about, that if we had, you know, a truly level playing field, then, you know, maybe those of us, you know, looking at it from the outside and looking at it from frankly, you know, more privileged positions would be able to say, oh, well, maybe we have done a disservice to Georgia for the last 10 years, right? Like maybe this is, we should be thinking about Georgia as a much bluer state than we thought.
I completely agree with you. And just to give you an example of what you mean and just how granular the oppression can be and how that shows in effect, give you an example. DeKalb County, there are some amazing volunteers who advocate on behalf of DeKalb County constituents to the DeKalb County Board of Elections. And I was part of one of the battles to where there was an amazing consultant who recognized that DeKalb County, by and large part, there are parts of the county that are predominantly Black, there are parts of the county that are mixed and parts of the county that are predominantly white. I grew up in South DeKalb, which is predominantly Black. And what we realized is that the absentee ballot boxes in the predominantly Black part of the county weren't as accessible. There just weren't as many. So you had to drive further per voter. The average voter had to maybe go 2, 3, maybe 4 miles to get to that absentee ballot box, where on the other side of part of the county, where it's not predominantly Black and Brown, you maybe only had to go a mile and a mile 0.5. And I know someone who may be listening to this podcast may be thinking, oh, well, is that big of a deal? Yes, it is. And it's those small things, those minutia points, where when you start to stack them up one by one by one, you start to see that it was the advocacy of organizations like Fair Fight, the advocacy of the Georgia Democratic Party, where, you know, you start to break down those levels of oppression and you get a time like we have now. With that being said, I say this being so lucky to be able to have volunteered with the party and, you know, play my little small part. I say this looking ahead and knowing that we were in a moment in time. Right. None of us can be oblivious about that. We were in a moment of time where we were in a country where in 2020 brought so many things ahead, where we were able to get some great turnout. But we were in a moment of time where I can't wait to see is that moment in time and the election be tested in 2022. Because I can't speak for anybody, but I guarantee you Georgia will be right back in that spotlight in 2022.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if we can all keep our energy up with Trump not on the ballot. I mean, that goes both ways. Obviously, Republicans turned out for Trump. I mean, that was the story of the last several years is, Trump brought record turnout and Democrats brought record turnout plus a little bit, you know. And so we'll see what happens when he's off the ballot. It's going to be up to all of us, I think, to keep up that energy and realize that, like, if we let up even for a year, even for a single midterm race, you know, these margins are so slim in both chambers that it could go away in a heartbeat.
Do you think that the average individual knows that Trump like beat his own record in this election and that you're right, we were able to beat the record that was just beaten? And that's just insane to me.
Yeah.
Like Trump lost the election by beating his own record. And then we won it by beating the record he just beat. That is absolutely insane to me.
Let me ask you this one. Is in looking at sort of the conditions on the ground in Georgia, in a state that 4 years ago, 6 years ago, 8 years ago, would not have been on, you know, if you were a strategic campaign manager, right, would not have been on the list of like, oh, okay, well, this is a state that we're going to take that has been reliably Republican and we're going to turn it purple and then blue. Where's our next positive surprise going to be? Are there other states that have kind of a similar background, you know, where you would say it looks more Republican than it is because of the combination of voter suppression, sort of low turnout? Is there something that you think where we could export this model elsewhere?
It's funny. Some friends and I were having this conversation, and 10 years ago, a friend of mine reminded me of this. He's like, 10 years ago, I told him, I was like, you know, I'm going to go to law school and I'm going to go back down to Georgia. And, you know, I want to be in public service and turn Georgia blue. You know, I didn't necessarily know what that meant then. And I only played a small part now. But I believe that in my core because it was my home state. And I have two friends that I talk about this all the time. And one of my friends there believes that to be true in Alabama. And this was brought up in Alabama. And then another friend believes it to be true in South Carolina, you can kind of understand given, you know, the major election that they just had there. But what I found was that they believed it to be true because they were from Alabama and from South Carolina, who had left the state and had seen some amazing things and recognized that the only difference in these other states, change that they were seeing in these other states, was the fact that in these other states, people had an opportunity for their voices to be heard in a collective. And I truly believe that's what's happened here in Georgia. Yes, I guess I'm not naive to think that the population and the demographics in Georgia haven't changed, but I'm also not so naive to believe that they changed so much to say that this election that, you know, Democrats had this election in the bag. So I am going to say those two states because I know I have friends there who believe that that's their state can change because they've lived there. They have family members who never voted before. And just like me, who's in the same position, know that there can be a day when their family members are texting and calling them on election day, screaming, yay, we did it. And it's our first time voting.
Well, I love that. And, you know, and as you point out, it is a question of the more we change the thought process that goes into what counts as an election, the more we open that up, the more we make it possible to really get turnout from areas that, from sections of the population that have been deliberately deterred as a result of policy choices from participating in the process, right? And so I love, you know, you highlighting 3 of the 5 million votes that were cast, right, were cast either early in person or early mail-in, right? Well, like, other than history, right, there is no reason that elections need to be a day, right? Particularly need to be a work day for working people. It forces you, you know, to make choices. And I think that dovetails with your other comment on, you know, the location of ballot boxes, right? And you're like, well, look, the difference between a mile, mile and a half, or 4 or 5 miles might not seem like a big deal to you, but two things. Number one, that's super big deal to somebody that doesn't have a car.
Right.
And number two, even among those who do, right, it's the repetition of a dozen things that, you know, that suppress the vote by 1/10 of a percent or 1/3 of a percent or 0.5 of a percent, right? That they might, each one might not be sufficient to, you know, tip an election in and of itself. But when you put it all together, you know, you're now talking about a substantial changing in the characterization of an electorate.
I completely agree with you. And it's something that you stated that it really resonated with me. You said it's about a mindset change, right? More than anything about this election in Georgia, I think it gave other states who just always thought that their vote was just didn't matter. It was going to go one way. It gave other states a glimmer to say, nope, that's not true. Change can happen. Change can come slow. And I'll tell a small story. I was speaking to one of my friends 2 days ago. This individual is a dual degree JD MBA from a top 3 institution, and they stated that I would never admit this anywhere, Jamil, but this is my first time voting in this election because the state I live in, and they're my age, the state I live in, I never thought that my vote mattered because I just knew this way my state was going to go. But after seeing what just happened in Georgia, I really had to rethink my position, rethink the position that I play in the process. No longer can I not vote, but I need to vote and also be a catalyst to make sure that my family and friends who I know have the same thought process I once did vote. And to me, that's the biggest change. That's what's most important. Because us three, we can sit on this phone all day and we can talk about voting, but we really love this stuff. We enjoy this stuff. But where I think the change happens is in living rooms and in kitchens when family members are talking about these things, what they would have never talked about, and they recognize that their vote and their voice matters. And that's where I think the change that we've been able to make here in Georgia is really going to have the biggest effect.
Fantastic. We are just so over the moon. I have, you know, not even the fascist coup attempt could keep us down for long. Seriously. I mean, that did put a damper on the day a little bit. Not going to lie. But then by the time, you know, we that had worn off, I'm just so back to being so happy that we won, you know, and it's thanks so much for your great work, Jamil, and for coming on our fundraiser and for coming on now. I just, it's so positive. It's so exciting for the future. Thank you.
Thank you both so much. And I can't wait to see you all in Atlanta. And I promise to wear the full suit.
All right.
And thank you.
And now it's time to thank our top patrons. Our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats. These are in the Hall of Fame category on patreon.com/law. And we give a thanks every week. And of course, people get a chance to change their shout out name and all that. And we encourage you to do so because we get a kick out of it. So here we go. Thank you to The Smiths Patreon account. Are we grammatically correct now? Incomplete Sentience. Love that one. Jake Mass. Richard Scott. Adderall, the President's Men. Jacob Daniel Murphy. Daniel Lennon, former Federal Reserve Attorney. Sorry, pause this list while I blow a kiss to my co-host. One good thing about having little babies, having kids, is you can get them to start blowing kisses. It's really cute once they can do that.
Oh, so adorable.
Sparkle Donkey Tequila, world's best tequila in the world, sparkledonkey.com. Avril Parks, Rest in peace, Brandon Bernard. We must abolish the death penalty. Next week on Lot Awful Movies is Fracture with Anthony Hopkins. Oh, okay. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. What is that? Is that a law movie? Okay.
I will know by the time I'm reading names.
Noctel for Root Creeper, The Coterie, Business Success with Salesforce. Find us at thecoterie.io. Justice for Beer. Check out Budget Botanist on Fiverr for all your virtual houseplant needs. Listening for years, still can't come up with something clever. Nevin Dudas' cow, Wesley Glenn Brock, Chelsea Olson, becoming a patron to get 5 episodes a week, and I finally caught up on months of backlog. Nice. New book, The Greatest Gift of All, Logical Path from Religion to Humanism by Mark McLean, out December 30th, pre-order now. Don't take legal advice from a Kraken. I like my porked streaks paired with at Casa Agria and at Emperor's Brewery beer. Nice. Check out Bradford Dallas on OnlyFans.com for the most risque legal briefs you've ever seen in a men's hockey locker room. Nice. Great Deku Tree. Facts from 1946 to 2016, it was an offense in Western Australia to possess 50 kilograms of potatoes. Interesting. Thomas Kleberg.
Big I can really go for 50 kilograms of potatoes.
Yeah, I have no idea how much that is. It's, I'm an American. That could be one potato or 7 million potatoes. I have no clue. Don't know how.
It's like 80 pounds.
Could be like half a potato for all I know. I don't know. Thomas Kleberg, Big Duck and Energy. Writ of Mandalorian is granted when there's no discretion. I like the idea that it's actually a small amount of potatoes. So the danger is like, what are you doing with like a portion of a potato? It's fine to carry plenty of potatoes. Like that's fine. But if you're caught carrying like a little bit of potato, like half of one, that's suspect and you should be arrested. The GOP is a domestic terrorist organization. No quarter should be given to them. The Perez Household, Buddy Friggin' Geyerson, One is First, but Two is a Close Second, Idea for a Screenplay, Air Bud, Man's Best Amicus, Hadron, The Browns, Pork Their Streak, Thomas Can Too, yeah, 8 Fabulous Cubed Lesbians Cubed, All Raised to the 1/3 Power equals 2, and that's one patron, now 2 Fabulous Lesbians who were asked when there will there be enough fabulous lesbians in the Patreon feed when there are 9. That's awesome. Edgy Veggie, Bob Newhouse, Sassy Italy Tours is asking you to donate to the Raphael Sassy Memorial Fund, RaphaelSassyMemorialFund.org. Greg Kreimer, oh, no associate of this firm has ever porked the streak. Well, not anymore. Jennifer Chakowski, Biden Harris 2020, now to win Georgia runoffs. Get with the times. Hans Royal, Mike Hall, an old, mad, blind, despised, and dying king. That Dickens always with the compliments. Say it with me, amicus. Simple Country Hyper Chicken. I'm not even a tortfeasor and I'm kicking your ass. So you're saying the Dotard is going down in Georgia. Angry Macface. Sorry, Andrew, Uncle Frank is too far gone. Breath of the Wild is the best game ever. A Link to the Past is a close second. Very, very good content on that. I love those games, both. Penelope is ranting about Terpsichore's cryptography, or by the way, some people say Terpsichore's cryptography. The Books That Burn podcast, reviewing fictional depictions of trauma since 2019. Given how political judicial appointments are now, is it really over-politicizing things to have SCOTUS term limits? It's unconstitutional, I think, right? So Justice in life and conduct of the state is possibly only as first it resides in the hearts and souls of the citizens. Okay. If everyone listened at speed 1.3, they might understand long legal explanations without exceeding their attention span. Motion for Andrew to do an explainer episode or series on the Federalist Papers. Oh boy. And you know what? That ought to help with my insomnia a little bit too. I can try to read those to prep. Uzi Rudy's Legal Ruse movie was a doozy. Crazy Corgi, Murray Gregerson. Change my Patreon name so that I don't jump every time you read it. Beyond Meet the Streak. Yep. I move for a bad court thingy. The Yodeler has exited the solar system. Next stop, Alpha Centauri. I, the Streak, have been porked, but I will be back for you again, Thomas Smith. In Washington, we pronounce Washington, D.C., D.C. Makes sense. In Illinois, we pronounce it sedition. We got a good combo there. I became a patron because this is the best podcast ever. Thomas Smith, Porker at Law. Brent Medling, Jake, Jordan Jai, Jessamine, donate to Georgia Runoff, or Wright Said Fred will come back. Geez, still. Christopher Brown, Philly Live Show 2022, I will bring the scotch and the cheesesteaks. Lawful Copter says, Andrew and Thomas, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for everything you guys do. The wheels of justice turn faster than the speed I changed my Patreon name. Hello, my name is Porky McPorkington Shire. I'm so porked that they won't even play my I'm terrible at everything music anymore. There's a goat. Why is there a goat? Andrew Seidel's butt is shocked to find out Josh Hawley's fascism is driven by his Christian nationalism. Zirkle, Odin the Law Dog, Robert M., it's a good day to bake a double peach tart and enjoy it with a nice glass of haha Trump can't tweet. Josh Hoku, Polly Hernandez, check out Ring Runner and Brigador on Steam, two slightly mad indie labors of love that do not deserve their obscurity. And despite it all, Biden is still president-elect and Democrats control both chambers of Congress. Woo, your turn, Andrew.
Thank you to the CEO of Antifa. Join our leadership call this Sunday. I'm on that. Emily Rainbow Spence. This tweet is written on a cocktail napkin, and it still says attempted coup, and coup is spelled wrong. Jason Copas. Hotspear suggests Biden pardon a nonviolent drug offender every day until Republicans agree to limit the president's pardoning power. Give to modestneeds.org. Give to modestneeds.org. Not that, Chris Wallace. 2020 can bite my shiny metal ass. Whatever happened to Michael Avenatti? Yeah, he defrauded a bunch of people and super bad dude. Holy effing insurrection, Batman. Do we still have a democracy? Asking for a friend. Yes, we do. Nate Drex, optimism is overrated. No, it isn't. Darth Mandy Pants, double impeached a total landscaping resort. No idea what a motion in lemonade is, but it sounds delicious. 13th century Saxony gravel truck lawyer Alfred Wallace. I am the bad things that happen in Philadelphia. Stay gritty. Diogenes the Cynic was right. Jennifer Cratch donated to Equal Justice Initiative in honor of my still MAGA dad. Well, that's a productive way to channel that frustration. Unionized Brooklyn friends. The streak has been porked. Long live the streak. CivilPoliticsRadio.com. Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Valley Free Radio. Good job on the voting for Joe Biden. Please continue with the hand washing. John Bilderback. Stephen Balticate Sandoval. It seems that Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't know how to pronounce Kamala yet. But I think Taylor Greene is going to be a recurring feature on the show in 2021, I have a feeling. Philip Kaiser, Andrea the Arbitrary Capricious, you tell me the definition of a sandwich and I'll tell you if a crunch wrap is a sandwich. Sonic and Knuckles, Pence is just mad he couldn't get on the no-fly list before his debate. A bit of a dated reference, but still funny. Absion, Payne's Trumpet, Trambolist, let me be slightly more explicit because I like being slightly more explicit. Jonathan, is building a theme park dedicated to the delicious fact that Trump wanted Four Seasons, got Doubletree. Can we charge the Trumpers with capital T treason yet? Motion by defendant AI to be removed as a party. Stop. Ask a question a karaoke legend would ask. Milo Meadsong, Esquire, halfling bard and attorney at law. Join your labor union together. We bargain alone. We beg. One okay-ish straight man greets two fabulous lesbians. Before the invention of the crowbar, all corvids did their drinking at home. James K. Doctor at night, homeschooling our kids in the day. Pretty sure my wife's a superhero. Chad T. Anonymous. OA, PIAT, Cogdis, and AG are 8 of 10 for an Among Us live stream. Just saying. Oh. Therese Chan, wordorigins.org, your source for legal terms from 13th century Saxony. Notus, Latin. Known, notre, Middle English. RIP, notorious RBG. Yeah, I'll give you a chest pump and some pour one out for that. Unicycular petty theft. Joe Boo's Rum, your Yodel Mountain Fantasy Football League champions, asterisk. They said I could be anything, so I became two fabulous lesbians. Derek, Trump pardoned three turkeys this week. Congratulations, Corn Cobb and Michael Flynn. Just barely outrunning being pecked to death by lame ducks. A string of unpronounceable characters. RondaTheDork.com. I still haven't gone there yet. Have you?
No.
The coronavirus apocalypse is making me too depressed to think of anything clever this week. Malika Chandler, Tricicular Manslaughter, Adam Costa, Soggy Pants, Jay Aldenwalt, Buttercup's Legal Services, actual legal advice from an actual cat. That's actually true. Matthew Vernon, Warnock gonna put up with Mitch lying his ass off anymore. Ding dong, the Mitch is dead. Sakashite Fukusumi, delights in all manifestations of the Terpsichorean muse. Oh, you got me to say Terpsichorean. Okay, fair enough. Adopt a homeless pet and oppose decloning and ear docking. De jure belli et pacis at last, baby. Heather L. Jeremiah's Fancy Microwave Emporium. Ian and Allie. Danny Rosari. Eli Bosnick. David in Brooklyn. Are you not Mr. Bentley? I bet you can't trip me. I don't get that reference, but
it's looks like so. Yeah, it's from my old F This podcast from my video game stream, twitch.tv/seriespod.
Well, there you go. So yeah, I set that one up perfectly for you. Sam Danow, Mitchell, no commute, so behind on podcasts. Marjorie Taylor Greene is the Matt Gaetz of Louis Gohmert's. Natasha Crunchwrap wants you to support the Justice Policy Institute. I agree with that 100%. Sam Buck, and of course, our all-time great, he who shall never be dethroned, Conrad Michaels.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
No kidding.
And now it's time for T3BE answer time. This is a big one. Do I start a new streak with which to pork with? Or do I merely not? Let's find out.
All right. So, Thomas, yeah, this was a con law question. This was about state law providing funding for public schools using property values, the result being a disparate impact that student funding in high property value areas was... those schools were better funded, and in lower areas, they were worse funded. And so the question is, in a lawsuit in which students in the low property area, property value area, challenges the law on the basis that it violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, who will prevail? And you said, well, this just kind of sounds like the way that public schools are funded, right? Like, yeah, this sounds like the status quo. So probably that means the state's going to win. And why is the state going to win? Presumably because for an equal protection clause analysis, they're going to look at it and say that rational basis scrutiny applies, that being poor is not a protected class. And the only gloss I would add on that is, and also... bizarrely, that education is not a fundamental right. When you have a deprivation of a fundamental right, that can also trigger.
Wouldn't matter, you know, some of that other stuff. Oh, I didn't think about that, but okay. Yep. But in this country, we don't view education as a fundamental right. So
the rather depressing answer is, in fact, your answer B.
Hey!
Education is not a fundamental right, and being poor is not a suspect classification. Therefore, the law requires a rational basis review. You did, and I will say formulations.
Okay. I would not have gotten this right in year one of this show, or two, or maybe even three. Maybe I shouldn't get too cocky because it's two questions, but maybe I can rise to the challenge of this impossible iteration of the test. All right. I feel pretty good about this one.
I think you should. And I think you are exactly correct, right? In that this is not an example of where like baseline intuition will get you to the right answer, right? The baseline intuition, I think, would lead you in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
You would say, well, yeah, education seems pretty important, and it definitely seems arbitrary to, say, oh, kids in rich areas are going to get a better public education than kids in poor areas. And all of that, I think human instinct is correct. I think we all know how we both feel about it, but
yeah,
all that would lead you to the wrong choice. I think you deserve a double set of kudos for that.
I feel like you could be a little bit happier for me, but okay, I'll take it. I'm fine.
I thought I got it wrong or something. How much more can we ask for that? I said, I think you parsed through a hard question.
You're like when I answer a riddle, you're like the Sphinx or something. If I answer the riddle correctly, you're like, fine.
You get to go through
the labyrinth.
I have to throw myself off this cliff now. That's what happened to the Sphinx. So, I'm excited for you.
I think the important thing is hashtag don't pork the streak is back.
Yeah.
That is, yeah. We have in a mere, what a good news couple weeks, Andrew. In a mere couple weeks, we've changed the balance of the Senate. We've gone from a streak that needed to be porked to now a streak that I very much don't want to pork. It just couldn't get any better. And therefore, I would like to announce that we're retiring the show.
You are correct. The best kind of correct.
He's not even a lawyer and he's kicking your ass.
No, I'm just kidding. We're never retiring the show. And let's find out who our amazing, lucky, porkage, no porkage winner is this week. Hop in that time machine.
Well, Thomas, a bunch of people got this one right, including Thomas Mowell on Twitter, who writes, "The chapter I was editing had just discussed San Antonio Independent School District versus Rodriguez. No fundamental right to education that would trigger the 14th Amendment, so strict scrutiny does not apply. Also, this ruling stinks." Well, Thomas, you are exactly correct, and you're also a Thomas. So, everyone, give Thomas Mowell a follow on Twitter. That is at @ThomasMowle, and congratulations to both Thomases for getting this one right, and congratulations to Thomas Mowell for being this week's winner.
And that's our show. Wow, still on positivity, Andrew. Let's see how long we can keep it going. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah, that's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it would be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.